I'm Lina Ahmadou. Welcome to Health Chat. Imagine not being able to hear the sound around you or having difficulty hearing. This is the case for millions of people around the world who suffer from hearing loss. A common condition globally, the World Health Organization projects that 2.5 billion people will have some degree of hearing loss by the year 2050. About 80% of people with disabling hearing loss live in low and middle income countries. The burden of hearing impairment is higher in sub-Saharan Africa than elsewhere in the world. For more on the subject, I spoke with Professor Ambroise Wonkam, medical geneticist and principal investigator for the Hearing Impairment Genetics Studies High Genes Africa Project. Dr. Wonkam is an assistant professor in the Division of Human Genetics at the University of Cape Town, South Africa. Take a listen. Professor Ambroise Wonkam, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lino, for your invitation, and thank you for all the listeners.
You are a professor in medical genetics, and when we look at the issue of deafness and hearing impairment, will you kind of give us a sense of what the problem is?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think hearing impairment or deafness, the way you say, deafness generally is when people don't hear. When they can have a certain level of hearing, is called hearing impairment. So this is a condition that we tend to call the silent epidemic, because a lot of people are affected, but very few talk around it. The reason why I'm very happy that we're going to have this conversation. The name of our project is called High Genes Africa for Hearing Impairment Genetic Study in Africa. The focus of our research is on congenital hearing impairment, so on children that are born deaf, because it's at the time the devastation on the family is much more higher. In terms of number, we can count that, for example, in the United States, one child out of 1,000 will be born deaf. In Africa, it's much higher. It's up to 7 in 1,000 in Nigeria, 6 in 1,000 here in South Africa. And we estimate that in high-income countries like in the U.S., for example, 50% of children that are born deaf are because of a genetic cause. In Africa, our estimation is around 30%, so there is a lot of environmental cause, specifically meningitis, that lead to deafness. So, but our focus is on genetic cause, because it allows us to provide counseling within family. And the impact, of course, is devastating. Our study have shown that 90% of children that are born deaf are born from hearing parents. So that poses a lot of challenges in terms of education, in terms of parenting, in terms of resources within the family to take care of the hearing impairment.
During your research, what did you find in terms of the probable cause? I know you talked about environment, also diseases like meningitis, but if you want to focus on the African context, what do we see more often?
I think what we see more often is environmental cause. And it depends where you are in Africa. If you are in the middle of Africa, like in Cameroon, Mali, where we are performing some of the study, or in Senegal, meningitis is the most common cause. And the reason they are seasonal meningitis in what is called the meningitis belt, where children, unfortunately, after being affected, have a sequela of deafness. But we are still very much interested in genetic cause. That is only the 30%. And the only reason why we have more genetic cause in Europe is just that the environmental factor have been reduced drastically because of the control of infection. And the second reason is that there is more possibility, technically wise, to investigate genetic cause in Europe and America than in Africa. But even with the data that we have now, we know genetic cause is a good component within the continent, and it can vary from places to places. In Cameroon, for example, it's 30%. Our estimation that in Mali is much higher, and the reason is because of the consanguinity, because people can marry amongst cousins, that increase a little bit the proportion of genetic cause.
So what did your research, or what does it entail?
The reason why we have been investigating, first of all, is that there is very little knowledge on genetic cause of hearing impairment in population of African ancestry, not just African in Africa, but African in America, African American, African in Caribbean, there's very little data. When we started investigation, for example, we started with genes that are very common in Europe, and one genes, for example, called Connexin 26 gene, the name is not important, but it's explained up to 50% of genetic causes in children that are born from European ancestry parents or Asian ancestry parents. But when we investigated the very same gene in population in Africa, the explanation of 0%. So it couldn't, we didn't explain our children born in Africa. So that means that the diagnostic tool that we have out there will not be very useful for population of African ancestry. That was already the main reason. So our first reason was to know what are the genes that are valid for population of African ancestry that will improve the diagnostic, that also improve preventative care. So the type of sample that we take are sample of family where we know hearing is due to genetic cause. And the way we select those are family where there is at least two children affected by hearing impairment, family where we know the both parents are cousin, because if they are direct cousin, we know the highly likelihood that the child is born deaf because of a genetic cause is higher. The third are some condition that we know are associated with hearing impairment because of genetic cause, like a specific condition called Waardenburg syndrome. Once again, the name is complicated, but I'm pretty sure you have seen at least once in the street someone with white forelock here or with striking blue eyes. That condition generally is associated with hearing impairment. So we look for those conditions. We take blood from parents and from children that are born deaf and for those that are not deaf in the same siblings. And we use genetic to investigate, specifically a technique called whole exome sequencing, where we sequence all the 20,000 genes that we have and analyze them.
And after your analysis, what are some of the findings?
The first thing that we confirmed was that gene that is very common in Europe, Connexin 26 genes, definitely do not explain hearing impairment in population from Cameroon, in population from Mali, in population from South Africa, in population from Senegal, in population from Nigeria that we have recruited. Actually, I believe that we have the largest recruitment of family with hearing impairment of population of African ancestry in the world. So what we say through our research, I don't think you're gonna have those information anywhere else in the world. The second thing that we found is that there is one exception for that genes, is in Ghana. In Ghana, we found that GGB2 genes, Connexin 26 genes, explain up to 40% of children that are born deaf. And we found a mutation that is only found in population from Ghana. So we counted the founder mutation. So probably the first mutation happened in Ghana and was restricted in Ghana. We found the very same variant in some population from the diaspora, for example, amongst African American, which makes a lot of sense through, because probably the mutation moved through slavery route. So that really defends the main findings, the gene that explain hearing impairment in most population in Asia, in Africa, and Europe do not explain hearing impairment in Africa. The second finding that we found is that there is one gene, probably this is good because it's the first time we speak about it around it publicly, that is called Myosin 15A gene that explains more family that have hearing impairment in at least three of the family of African countries that we have investigated, Cameroon, also in Ghana after GGB2 and in Mali. The other thing is that we know that there is a potential for novel gene discovery in Africa. For example, in Ghana, we found 7 novel genes of hearing impairment. That means if we haven't investigated population in Africa, we never will have found that. In Cameroon, we found 7 novel genes of hearing impairment, and this is in less than 100 families for each of those countries. So that we believe that even with this preliminary data, there will be a strong contribution of Africa toward novel gene of hearing impairment globally.
So, Professor Wankam, when you look at the findings, I mean, you say the research is still ongoing, but up until now, what can you say in terms of the sort of impact that such research can have in prevention of deafness on the continent? Is it even possible to talk about prevention based on such a research?
That's a really, really important matter. The first thing that we realize above genetics, because genetics is fascinating, but the real life of patient is more than genetics. It's the impact on family. The funny thing that we realized initially was that we were not appropriately prepared for the research, because when we started our engagement with family and support group doing hearing impairment, we quickly realized that we needed to educate ourselves for sign language. So when we had the first meeting, we realized that we did not plan to have someone that can sign either in French or in English, so that we can speak to patient and family, at least those that was deaf. So we had to change our strategy by recruiting our research team to personnel that are actually deaf, that allow us to communicate with family and patient. So the first barrier that we found was language. So most of this family and patient have a lot of difficulty communicating with the society. The second barrier that we found was a high level of stigma. Most of these family are perceived, or individual are perceived, like having intellectual disability, which is not the case, because in most of the cases, they have what we call non-syndromic hearing impairment. They have just hearing impairment or nothing else. Otherwise, they are very highly functioning. The third level of difficulty we found was that the school for the deaf was not accessible to most family and most children. In Cameroon, for example, most school for the deaf was privately run. That means that for family that do not have a possibility of sending school their child there, the child will not be educated. In Ghana, it was better organized because those schools were government funded. That means that most family potentially could have access to education was one problem. The third problem was parenting. Most children that was born deaf were sent to those schools for the deaf, but those schools were mostly boarding school. That means that the parents felt that they would not afford education in a similar way they would have done it if the child was hearing. So all those social challenges, of course, was important element that can be immediately provided to policymakers to address the challenges of family. And critically, most children was diagnosed late. For most family we found, the diagnosis of hearing impairment was above 3 years. And we know that the time of intervention needs to be before 3 years, whether it's hearing aid, whether it's speech therapy for those that can hear a little bit. That means that newborn screening, the screening of hearing impairment in most African settings have to be established like yesterday, like now. And that's probably one of the immediate findings that may help drive policy and drive changes for hearing impaired communities.
Do you find that in terms of, I don't know if I can say treatment or perhaps management, there are resources, I mean, we can't even talk about enough resources, but at least there are some resources that are available. And is it possible? I guess at some level, it's no longer reversible. But can you talk to us about management and perhaps treatment?
I think the first level of management is, of course, newborn screening. So the children need to be screened for hearing impairment at birth. So that's really the most efficient thing that needs to be done. Is that available? No. We haven't seen it in any single African country where we have work, even in South Africa. We have seen in South Africa only in the private sector, but in the public sector, there is no newborn screening for hearing impairment. When the child is discovered at deaf, depending on the level of hearing impairment, external hearing aid can be provided. It was not accessible. In South Africa, generally, yes, but in the other African country, no. We found some private charity providing some hearing aid to some of the children. The third level of care may be, for example, cochlear transplant that will provide some surgery and provide hearing, some correction of hearing impairment, even if the hearing impairment is very deaf. The cochlear transplant was available, is available in South Africa, but it was not available in most other African countries where we investigated hearing impairment. But there have been some progress. For example, we found some group in South Africa specifically that can use telephone, cell phone, smartphone to test for hearing impairment even early in childhood. So it's something that we plan to implement at the next phase of our research to allow that even if newborn screening is not possible, that this device can be used early as possible to diagnose those children that possibly have hearing impairment.
Anything you'd like to add before we wrap?
I think probably we should remember that there are many epidemics out there, and hearing impairment is one of them. It's a silent epidemic because no one talks about it. There's little intervention of it. And there are many families, many patients, many individuals that are in the corridor of desperation because the public and the public officers have not yet provided enough policy and action to alleviate the burden of hearing impairment in many families, particularly in Africa.
Professor Ambroise Wokem, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your invitation and to give an opportunity to speak a little bit of our work to the global audience. Thank you.
That was medical geneticist Professor Ambroise Wokem, principal investigator for the Hearing Impairment Genetics Study, High Genes Africa Project. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, the reparations debate. Should descendants of slaves be compensated for the free labor their ancestors were forced to render during slavery? We talk with two analysts who spar over the renewed push for reparations in America and discuss some contemporary experiments taking place in states and cities across the country. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We continue to look at hearing impairment. More than 1 billion people live with some form of disability around the world. Observers say they are disproportionately at risk from the COVID-19 pandemic. This includes millions of people who suffer from disabling hearing loss. Bawen Teng is president of the International Federation of Hard of Hearing Young People. He elaborates on some of the challenges.
Bawen Teng, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So you are the president of the International Federation of Hard of Hearing Young People. Can you talk to us about the mission of your organization?
Yes. We're called Eye for Hip, and so it is an international federation of at least 20 member organizations that are spread across the globe. So each country has its own organization that join our federation. And what we do is we are a group of young people with hearing loss from the age of 18 to 35. And the primary purpose of our organization is to form connection between all the young people, to build a sense of community for people with hearing loss, to share information and resources on how we navigate our lives with education, employment, and social settings. So ultimately, we want to be a support for each other because we know the challenges that we go through living with a hearing loss, and as well as some strategies that we use to navigate the barrier.
So clearly, having a hearing impairment, whether it's a hearing loss or difficulty, is a challenge in itself. So it's a bit redundant to ask about some of the challenges, but if you could share with us some of the realities that young people are confronted with.
With the hearing loss, we rely a lot on visual communication, so being able to see the people's faces and be able to read their lips. So because of the pandemic, people are now wearing face masks. And so that is an added challenge for us who really benefit from looking at the person's face for visual cues to fill in the gaps that we might miss from hearing the person. So it's becoming a lot more stressful and more exhausting for us to try to communicate with people around us. Sound is that most young people are experiencing a lack of confidence to navigate their surroundings because they are just so exhausted and depleted. And so that leads to withdrawal from the community and an impact on your mental health. The other major challenge is accessing to technology. So whether it is the equipment that we use, like hearing aids and cochlear implants, which come with a very heavy price. And for young people who are just getting out in the workforce or even in school, a lot of the times these technologies are quite unaffordable for us. With the communication challenges, the one thing that we've really pushed for is the transparent face masks. So those are the masks that are clear and transparent while still providing a protection. And that way, we can still see the person's face and read the lips. And there are those who are medically approved so that it can be used in medical settings. And the other piece is the benefit of automatic captioning apps. So we've got those speech-to-text software on our phones like Google Live Transcribe or Microsoft Translator. So that is very helpful when we can go to any public setting and we put the phone out and turn on the app and point at the person that we're communicating with and have your phone transcribe what the person is saying.
So, Bawen, talk to us about why it's important for an issue like hearing loss to focus on the youth in particular.
So for our organization, we focus on youth because we know that it is a period of time where hearing loss aside, the age group is at a stage where they're trying to figure out what to do with their lives, right? So they need a lot of guidance and support and being able to know what the possibilities are. Because oftentimes having a hearing loss make us feel limited in the sense that, oh, there are some jobs that we're not able to do because of the hearing loss. So let's say a firefighter, a police officer, or a pilot. Right? So those are the typical jobs that people think, oh, a person who has a hearing loss won't ever be able to do it because they're not going to be able to communicate. But contrary to the fact, there are young people or even role models out there that are doing these professions and be able to find ways to overcome their hearing challenges. So what we want to do is to share those stories with the young people and say to them, we've got people out there who've been successful, police officers, firefighters, lawyers, doctors, you name it. And that is how they get it. And if they can do it, you can do it too. And that's the message that we want to bring to the young people, especially the next generation. And even more so, what we're focusing on now is spread the message to the areas of the world where they don't have a lot of resources compared to North America or Europe. So for example, South America and Africa are regions where we want to help these young people build capacity to know that as long as they have the proper technology and opportunity, they're able to accomplish and pursue their dreams.
A lot of times when it comes to disability, any sorts of disability, in low and middle income countries, people who are faced with those challenges are really sometimes even pushed aside or forgotten. And you mentioned Africa. What is your message?
So in my experience working with the hard of hearing communities in Africa, the biggest challenge that they face, I would have to say, the internet connection. Because we really rely a lot on the internet to connect with each other. And when there is not a stable network, it's much harder for the people to get together as a community to share ideas. So that is one of the barriers in helping the people in Africa, because oftentimes there could be one person or one or two people in a particular country that are doing the work and they need more resources. So they need to be able to connect with other communities in other countries in Africa. And so we've been trying to slowly build up a group known as the Africa Federation for Hard of Hearing. So that is made up of a small group of activists in different countries, and where we talk about existing problems right now. And it all comes down to a lack of information. So that goes back to my earlier point, is how are we able to share those information with people who are not able to easily access the content online, like because of the poor internet connection. So we are looking at like how we could look at going into the ground level and going into those communities in person through schools, and also talking to policymakers at the local government and university institution to see how they can partner with us to distribute this information, because it can be considered as a public health information that, you know, people who experience hearing loss could know what resources are out there. Ultimately, what we advocate for is communication access. And everyone in the world benefits from having an easier way to communicate with each other, so that we can connect with each other and we can support each other and we can all be part of a global community and not just accommodating one minority.
That was Bawen Teng, president of the International Federation of Hard of Hearing Young People. As we mentioned earlier, hearing loss may be treated for some people with surgery or a hearing device. Let's go to Nigeria, where Aminu Kano Teaching Hospital has conducted the first cochlear implant in Kano on two children ages 3 and 6 years old. Experts from the hospital say patients will no longer need to travel outside the country for such implants. Here is the story by Baraka Bashi, narrated by Justin Mullen Kanzedian.
Brightest Panum taps on a hard-boiled egg with a spoon. Like most other three-year-olds, he likes to explore and make noise. Unlike most other youngsters, he only recently begun to hear, thanks to a cochlear implant surgery. Brightest was the first patient to receive a cochlear implant at Aminu Kano Teaching Hospital. Two doctors from Turkey and Italy led the surgery.
We are happy our son had the surgery. Indeed, there is improvement already. It looks like he's healed, and it was a relief to find that he's recovering from deafness.
Dr. Mohamed Ghazali Hashim, head of the hospital's ear, nose, and throat department, participated in the surgery and learned techniques so the procedure can be replicated with other patients in Kano.
Two people came from abroad, and we thank Allah. They did the operations, and the hearing devices were installed successfully. One child was 6 years old, and the other was 3 years old, and we did it without any problems.
The small device implanted by the surgical team converts sounds into electrical impulses. Hashim explained that a patient needs time to recover after surgery before the device gets turned on.
We tested it during the operations and it was working. We won't turn on the hearing device until the surgical area is healed. That is, 3 to 6 weeks after the procedure. If he is unable to speak, then it will be necessary to teach him, which is another workload. The boy will start hearing noises. And what will that mean to him? His family will help him every single day until he can understand what people are saying.
Hashim said the cochlear implant procedure requires community support because it's expensive, costing more than 6 million naira, or nearly $14,600. The procedure can cost up to $80,000 in the United States, Discover Magazine reported in May. A 6-year-old girl also received a cochlear implant at the hospital, an invaluable resource for navigating the hearing world.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. I'm your host, Lina Ahmudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.